The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on. And once again, we thank you for listening. And on this particular day, Memorial Day, we want to stop for a moment and remember and honor those who have made a sacrifice so that each and every one of us can be free and to enjoy this beautiful day. We do salute these individuals. Today, we are tackling mosquitoes and inflammation of the brain, West Nile virus encephalitis, with guest expert Dr. Sharut Sambunwit, or Dr. Sam, of the USF College of Medicine here in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education on those 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And before we turn again to today's show, once again, probably for the last time, I want to draw everyone's attention to an interview in the Tampa Bay Wellness Magazine. It is in the monthly issue of, or this month's, that is the May issue, of the Tampa Bay Wellness Magazine, which focuses on health, fitness, medicine, nutrition, and lifestyle. We are the cover story and interview on the foundation, the Focus on Females Education Foundation. This magazine can be found at all CVSs, as well as Shapes Gyms, as well as some Publix and hundreds of other locations around the Bay Area. There, if you're interested in, or you're looking for it and you can't find it, you can call their number, which is 991-0323, 991-0323, to get find out where you can find get a copy of the Tampa Bay Wellness Magazine if you're having difficulty. And again, inside, it's a very nice interview. You learn more and more about what we're all about. And today, Dr. Sam is a board-certified internal medicine and infectious disease specialist. After completion of her fellowship in infectious disease in 2003, she joined the Polk County Health Department. While remaining active in teaching as a clinical faculty member, she was responsible for HIV care in a large rural HIV clinic in Central Florida. She joined the University of South Florida full-time in 2006. In her current position as assistant professor of medicine, she also serves as communicable disease director and clinical research director for Hillsborough County Health Department. Dr. Sam is active in teaching. She currently serves as faculty of the Florida AIDS Education and Teaching Center and co-chairs the scholarly concentration in research for medical students. Her passion in education, women's health, and women's rights has drawn her to Planned Parenthood. She has served as a board member for Planned Parenthood of Southwest and Central Florida since 2008. She's a member of the Gold Humanism Society, Alpha Omega Alpha Honor Society, and a lifetime member of Leadership Florida. In 2009, she received citation as a best doctor in America. And Dr. Sam, again, it's nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Maskin.
So this is a very interesting topic. I have to confess, I know very little about West Nile encephalitis or West Nile disease. And tell me, let's just open up by asking, when was this disease first recognized?
Actually, the disease has been recognized in the 50s, but the disease itself came to the U.S. in 1999.
Where did it originate from?
Some theory that think that it might be something to do with traveling. Mm-hmm. And since the virus is in bird primarily, mm-hmm. so the bird flies and the mosquito is around, if you have the right vector, you can transmit the virus to some other species, including horses and human.
So the initial cases in the 50s were outside of the U.S.?
Correct.
And all right, and so as you mentioned, West Nile is a virus, and is it in a what family of viruses is it considered?
It's flaviviridae.
And what are some of the other more well-known viruses in that family?
Hepatitis C, believe it or not.
Okay, so it has some common ancestry or evolutionary classification as hepatitis C.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Does it have some shared properties as hepatitis C?
Well, it can be transmitted by blood products, okay, but hepatitis C is not transmitted by bites, so mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about the mosquito might carry hepatitis C, but it is found that West Nile can be transmitted by blood transfusion, mother to the baby, and also to organ transplantation.
Okay, so for that reason, obviously, if you're interested in donating blood, they're checking for West Nile virus.
Yes, they do.
And similarly, then, if someone has West Nile virus, then it is potentially contagious with an open sore or cut. Is that true?
That one has so far not been reported in the transmitted cases. Most of the cases are transmitted by bites from the mosquitoes.
Mm. How about sexual relations with someone with West Nile virus?
So far has not been reported. Mm-hmm. The reason partly is probably because of the time of the virus in the blood is very short.
Okay.
Because once they got the bite, it takes about 3 to 14 days for the person to become ill. And actually the illness for West Nile, most of people, about 80% at a time, don't have any symptoms. About 20% have mild symptoms, including some fever, ache and pain in the muscle. But they don't really have encephalitis. Okay. Mm-hmm. Encephalitis happened only approximately about one every 150. Okay. So the disease is not that common.
Mm-hmm.
If you check the blood in the main population, you might find some more of the numbers, but actual cases is really rare. I just checked recently, to date, for this year, no cases instead of Florida.
Has there been an epidemic in Florida in the past?
I cannot really say epidemic, but you can see sporadic cases mm-hmm. that actually West Nile virus is one of the virus that the state has been follow up for because it's transmitted by the mosquitoes, and some other two that cause almost the same diseases are St. Louis encephalitis mm-hmm. and Eastern equine encephalitis. All these three the state had been checking because it's transmitted by the same
mosquito.
Same mm-hmm. vector, and also it's associated with birds and some animals, including horses.
Okay, so all right. So it's it first was reported back in the 50s, came to the U.S. in 1999. Now, has it been identified in, as you called it, the sentinel chickens? Would you explain to our listenership what the sentinel chicken is and how our public health department follows the risks and presence of West Nile in the community by looking at the sentinel chickens?
Sure. There's a way to monitor the activity of these viruses. And the state health department has invest in the programs called Sentinel Chicken Programs. Not all the counties that have this program, but Hillsborough is one that has it.
Okay.
What they do, they have the people in the community that have flock of chickens. They volunteer with their chicken, and the chicken will be left outside in a cage, but that cage doesn't have screen so that the mosquitoes can still go in and out and can bite the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
What they do, they will send an epidemiologist out to draw blood of the chicken, and they send the blood to the state lab. And what they do, they check antibody in the blood of the chicken mm-hmm. and see if the chicken been exposed to the virus.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, if they see increase in activity of the infections, and then they put the alert for mosquito control people and come down and spray the area.
Mm. And what is the status of the sentinel chickens thus far this year?
Right now, about 35 in Hillsborough has been reported, but it's not that alarming yet. But remember, this is only in the end of May,
mm-hmm.
so the season of the mosquito that will increase in population has not really in the peak yet.
So there have been 35 of these sentinel chickens with positive blood serology for West Nile.
In the month of May, yes.
And just in this mm-hmm. past month.
Mm-hmm.
And what's a normal, like, and say, do they even check these chickens in December and January? Or?
Yeah, they've been checking that, but in each year, the peak is a little bit different, but usually the peak is in summer.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's correlated with the activity of West Nile
mm-hmm.
Infection in human, because the cases we see more sometime in summer and to the end of fall.
I'm just wondering, so that 35 chickens, is that a peak compared to, say, what it was in January? Or is it like 30, get 35 every month, for example?
Right now it's a little bit more
mm-hmm.
than the month that is cooler, which is pretty common in the activity.
So even in January and February, for example, you can get positive sentinel chickens?
Yes.
Okay. So there is an increase here in May compared to a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And again, let's... before we go to a quick break, let's talk about, again, why it's important to be at least aware of it when you hear people talking about the risk of West Nile virus or the increase in sentinel chicken count, why it's important. You touched upon it before. That is the 1 in 150 cases that can get encephalitis. What does that mean for our listeners if someone develops a case of serious West Nile encephalitis?
It is not the disease that you see very common.
Mm-hmm.
But since right now we don't really have the treatment for it,
mm.
so if the damage already happened in the brain, sometimes it can be stay there in the rest of the life.
Okay.
Sometimes people can die from it as well. And the important thing here, it is preventable.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk about that and more about this disease and this virus when we come back. This is Dr. Steve Maskin inviting you to call us with your questions about this virus as well as the St. Louis equine viruses as well. This is the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Be right back.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
The Gulf Coast Business Review sounds off every week with news on banking, law, real estate, government.
If President Obama's health care plan is approved, new required Medicaid spending by states would add $910 million in spending to Florida's budget.
Commercial development.
On top of Florida's already overburdened regulatory schemes, Hometown Democracy Amendment 4 will unfortunately require referendums on scores of proposed land use changes.
Industry.
To get back on the road to prosperity, Florida needs to create a better insurance climate, continue to reform property taxes, and defeat Amendment 4, giving businesses the environment they need to grow.
Every week, the Gulf Coast Business Review sounds off for your business. Keep up. Keep going. Subscribe to the Gulf Coast Business Review. From Tampa to Naples, it's news and information you need. From a pro-capitalist point of view, subscribe online at review.net. Review.net.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Yes, welcome back. This is Dr. Steve Maskin with Dr. Sam, and today's topic is West Nile virus and West Nile disease and encephalitis. And for those moms out there, anybody else concerned about potential of getting bitten by a mosquito and the potential risk of developing this disease, please call now. Our number is 289-1860, 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it's 877-969-8600. 877-969-8600. And so, Dr. Sam, you mentioned before about this virus, which is, interestingly, the same family of viruses as the hepatitis C virus, has a 3 to 14 day incubation time. So after a human is bitten by a mosquito carrying that virus, within 2 weeks, symptoms may develop. And you also mentioned 80% have no symptoms.
That's right.
And so in that case, will those people always, in the future, if they are checked for giving blood, will they show antibodies?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. But in part of screening for blood transfusion, they do not check antibody. Actually, they check the DNA of the virus itself to make sure that the person actually have the virus in the blood at the time.
All right. So if you've had a case of West Nile virus show up, which is asymptomatic, as long as it's not in your, as long as you don't have active disease, you can be a blood donor.
Yes.
Okay. So the 20% that do develop symptoms, however, you mentioned fever, aches, and muscle pains. Do you have any additional comments on that?
Yeah, this is pretty classic for all the viral infection that caused by mosquito bites that can leading eventually to encephalitis. The word in the medical term they call prodrome, and actually it's the symptoms when it starts before the bad things happen.
Prodrome. Right.
Initially, it's presented with fever, headache, mm-hmm. aching in the body. Some people might have nausea and vomiting, mm-hmm. and sometimes might have swollen glands, especially in the case of West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. Sometimes can have skin rashes, sick in the stomach, some diarrhea, and those can start within the can have those symptoms for a few days. Sometimes can be weeks. But then in the patient, especially those who are very young or who are very old, can progress to have encephalitis and some more damage to neurological system. Mm. This could include more headache, neck stiffness, and can have change in the mental status, maybe leading to coma, sometimes have shaking, they call tremors. Mm-hmm. And sometimes can have weakness of the limbs. Mm. Those damage sometimes can leading to death, although it's not very common. But sometimes all those damage can be there even after the infection subsided.
Mm-hmm. So obviously it is especially important for the, as you mentioned, the elderly and the very young, or the parents of the very young, to be aware of this disease. I guess as far as evaluating it, and we all get bitten by mosquitoes. So the question becomes, at what point should we seek attention? And because, as you also mentioned, fever, I guess if you were bitten by a mosquito and within 3 days after getting bitten, you develop a fever, headache, and pain in your muscle, you should start thinking about possibility of getting a virus or a mosquito transferred virus, no?
It is.
At least
yes.
Start thinking about it.
Yes, that is a very good point. And also, if the headache is really bad, mm-hmm. and start having neck stiffness, and then you really need to go checked out.
Because after all, I mean, we all get mosquito bites, but typically it's more of a localized reaction. But mm-hmm. if we're starting to get now systemic mm-hmm. symptoms, then we have to at least think about it, share it with our, you know, our close, you know, family members, and possibly even share it with our doctor to try mm-hmm. and, you know, link the two in time.
Right.
And all right, so let's have a scenario, hypothetical. Someone gets bitten, they know they're bitten by a mosquito, and within 3 days they do develop a fever and headache, and they are concerned. What should that person do?
Yeah, if they have headache, neck stiffness, mm-hmm. et cetera, the symptoms that I had mentioned mm-hmm. that might fit, they should go to see a doctor. If they're mm-hmm. severe enough, mm-hmm. should go to emergency room, especially in those cases with severe headache mm-hmm. and neck stiffness, and maybe have some change in mental status or weaknesses. Mm. Those really need an urgent attention.
And what will the physician do at that point if, because our listeners are very educated and they are, you know, thinking about associating symptoms, and they think about the mosquito bite as well as the new symptoms, the onset of the fever and headache and so forth, and making that linkage, and they tell the doctor, what will the doctor do now that he's thinking about the potential for a mosquito-vectored disease?
Most of the time, what is usually happen in the emergency room is they're going to scan the brain to make sure that there is no mass or bleeding. Mm-hmm. And then if there's no mass or bleeding and safe enough to do spinal tap, and then they do spinal tap.
Okay. And can they'll check for the West Nile virus?
Yeah, they can check. Most of the hospital will check for all the viruses mm-hmm. that can cause by the mosquito bites. And also some blood tests can give you extra piece of information also when they send serology for the antibody to West Nile.
Okay. So, again, they're going to check for all three, the St. Louis, the equine, and the West Nile.
Mm-hmm.
And now you mentioned about the LP, the lumbar puncture, getting this cerebral spinal fluid from your back, lower back. Now, they're looking for the viruses or the antigen, the actual virus in that cerebral spinal fluid?
The generally for West Nile, they look for serology because if the IgM, which is immediate response to the mm-hmm. infection, is positive, it's with all the symptoms, it's confirmation of the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And also, when you come to the hospital with all the symptoms, that can be some other things as well. Mm-hmm. So with this change, with headaches, neck stiffness, and change in mental status, is usually leading towards the inflammation of the brain itself, as mm-hmm. that's called encephalitis in general. Mm-hmm. So there's so many other causes of encephalitis, but in this season, West Nile is one of them, and that's why usually the doctor will order the test to confirm it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And all right, so as you mentioned, the serology, the blood tests are very important, and they'll check the brain with scanning, and maybe get some cerebral spinal fluid as well. Treatment. Tell us about what kind of treatment the person should expect.
Unfortunately, there is no specific treatment for West Nile virus. The person who got sick will be treated by supportive treatment. For example, they might get the medicine to reduce the fever. They might get IV fluid and to monitor for activity of seizure, if there is any. And then most people will get recover. May or may not been back to the baseline. It depends on how much of damage the brain is. Mm-hmm. So because of this, it is very important for all of us try not to get West Nile virus infection to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's pretty simple.
Well, before we go to prevention, which we're going to spend some time with, you mentioned most people that do get this recover. All right. You have a sense of what span of time it takes to get over these? I guess it may differ depending upon the severity of the actual disease that one develops.
Yes. If you have more damage, mm-hmm. it may take a long time, and some of the damage might not recover.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be back with more on prevention and answering your questions. Again, it's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Call in with your questions now. We're tackling West Nile virus with Dr. Sam. This is Dr. Steve Maskin on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Be right back.
It's Mike Gallagher. In this very important election year, where can you go to get fresh, intelligent, conservative reporting on the issues and the candidates? Whether it's the economy, the Supreme Court, or immigration, Town Hall Magazine is loaded with stories and insights you can't get anywhere else. And with your subscription, you can choose your own free gift book. Choose from Dick Morris's Take Back America, Karl Rove's Courage and Consequence, Michelle Malkin's latest book, and more. Pick your free gift book when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Must reading for conservatives. Log on to townhallmagazine.com today. That's townhallmagazine.com.
Studio.
This is get your foursome together.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation.
Hi, I'm Captain Alexander Reagan here in Iraq.
I'm Chief Roger Baker, NMCB 74, Camp Leatherneck, Afghanistan.
Hi, my name is PFC Karen Leach. I'm here at Camp Victory, Baghdad.
I'm Lieutenant Timothy Bainham, stationed in Camp Cropper, Iraq.
This weekend, take time to reflect on the sacrifice of those in our military. Past, present, and future, we wish you a memorable Memorial Day weekend. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obscured tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010 and as America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. Today, Memorial Day, we are tackling West Nile virus and associated clinical diseases, including the risk of encephalitis. Now with me today is Dr. Sam from USF, infectious disease specialist. And as we've discussed, it is very important because, after all, there is no specific treatment for this disease other than supportive care. Most people do recover, but, of course, the best medicine is prevention. And therefore, we're going to spend some time about prevention. We all know, I guess, the simple things about mosquitoes and how to avoid getting bitten, but let's talk about it in a little more detail. And, Dr. Sam, you have a little memory aid to how to remember things that we can do, each and every one of us can do, to prevent getting bitten and developing this disease. Let's go over. Is it the 5 D's?
Yes, they are the 5 D's. Very simple to memorize. The dust, don, dress, deet, and drain.
Let's say them again. Dust.
Dusk.
Dusk.
Okay. Dusk. Don, mm-hmm. Dress, deed, and drain. I'd like to go over into that.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, remember, we're in Florida. We love to go outdoors. We love flip-flop and shorts. So
right.
If we the time that these mosquitoes like to bite is when it's not that dark, not that bright. So that at the dusk time or the dawn time is the time that you will be more at risk if you go out.
Okay.
So avoid to go out during those time of dusk and dawn.
All right. Now let's get a little more detail. Is that like a two-hour window as the sun's setting, for example, in the evening,
mm-hmm.
or when it's rising in the morning?
Yeah.
Because it's really it is a couple hours process that there's a risk factor there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
And then if you want to go because it's nice outside, let's dress properly.
Okay.
If you can have the clothing that cover you as much as possible, which is a little bit hard to do in Florida, but this would be more applicable in those who really want to go in the jungle. For example, if you're going to take the boat in the swamp, and then you really want to make sure that you have long sleeve shirt and pants, not shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the next D is DEET.
Before we go to DEET, do you recommend also to tuck the pant leg inside the sock?
Yes, definitely. And if your shoes come up to your ankle, tuck everything inside.
Mm, okay. Okay.
Okay. And the area, DEET is the chemical is commonly found when you buy the insect repellent spray.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's some of the things that been approved and recommended as well. Namely, picaridin or ashley is the oil that are extracted from lemon and eucalyptus. You can mm-hmm. use that as well.
Can you spell that?
P as a Peter, mm-hmm. I India, C A R I India, D David, I India, N Nancy. Picaridin.
So, picaridin. P I C A R I D I N?
Correct.
And this is available over the counter?
Yeah. When you look at the brand, you just need to look at the label, what it contains.
So it'll be in the spray.
Right.
Okay.
And lastly is something still with numbers. It's called IR3535.
What is that?
It's one of the chemical that had the same effect.
Okay.
But most commonly we see DEET.
Okay.
So when you use DEET, mm-hmm. you spray in the exposed skin. You don't need to spray inside. You don't need to spray on the skin that inside the clothing.
Okay.
So you spray, as for example, your arms, your hands, your leg, your neck. If you want to spray to your face, would recommend spray on your hand first and apply on your face because you don't want the spray get into your eyes or your mouth.
Okay.
And if you have the open wound, then to avoid it as well.
Do not spray on an open cut.
Correct.
Okay.
And if you want to help your children, mm-hmm. you spray for them and in the area that very small, you want to apply on your hand first and apply on the skin of your kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that is very important. And the last D is the drain. Why is that? Because the mosquito breed in the standing still water.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have the flower pots, some buckets, some barrels, and those water stand there, you need to empty it.
Mm.
The bird baths is also one of the important ones.
Mm.
If you have pots that might have some standing water, but you need it, you might draw extra holes to drain more so that it's quite dry.
Okay. All right. And those are very good. Tell me about, going back to the dress, is color important? Has that been shown to be a factor at all?
I'm not sure if mosquitoes are blind or not, but no, color doesn't make any difference.
Okay. All right. And then, so the standing water, really. So now, I guess we're now first entering the mosquito season
mm-hmm.
this year. I remember seeing an article in the paper not long ago about, was it a treatment plant, or they're getting geared up to prepare for spraying, or maybe just, you know, level of readiness. They're getting ready, to, you know, as the mosquito counts increase, they're getting ready to spray.
Yeah, and actually the mosquito control, they will do that. Usually if they plan to spray, they will give an alert to the health department as well mm-hmm. because we work really closely with them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things that, for example, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission,
mm-hmm.
they also work closely to the health department animal controls. Because if you somebody see dead birds, that's how they got the report to. And actually, they have website that you can load the forms.
Yes, please.
It's www.myfwc.com/bird.
Let's do that one more time.
www.myfwc.com.
FWC.com. MyFWC.com, which is my
Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Fish and Wildlife. Is it? Okay.
And if you see birds, you don't pick it up, okay?
Because a dead bird, leave it alone.
You just leave it alone. Just find the information to this website, and then they will come and look at the area.
Okay. All right. Now, you mentioned that the bird and horses, I think, was the other target of the mosquito, yes?
Yes, the bird is one of the main hosts, okay, for this virus. Mm-hmm.
And horses is another?
Yes, horses is one of the common one, and some of the wildlife as well. But what is the common animal that could be a culprit in infection in human usually is horses, because we live so close to them. Mm-hmm. And in Florida, there's a lot of horses as well.
Okay. Now, consequences of the infection. I think we talked a little bit about that. And actually, I guess what sounds like a good news is that most people do recover. But I guess the key is to have a high index of suspicion to correlate the bite with symptoms.
Right. But interestingly, most people don't recognize the bite. Because we're in Florida, going outdoor and get bit by mosquito is so common. It's part of our life.
And then we all get, we get colds frequently or once in a while. So the challenge is, to recall that you just got bitten by a mosquito a couple of days ago and now you have a cold, and to try and to be at least aware if things progress that there may be a linkage there. You mentioned, too, about the rash that this virus can cause. Is it a typical rash that one sees when bitten by a mosquito, or is it different in some way?
Yeah, it's a different kind of rash. Mm-hmm. It's more like a viral rashes that usually is red. It's not itchy.
Not itchy.
Not itchy.
Is it in the area that was bitten, or can it be?
It's widespread.
Diffuse?
It's diffuse. It usually happens in the body area. Sometimes can come to the neck. Very rare, go to the face. But a rashes has been reported only few of the cases. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you will see that the patient come to the hospital and come in with fever, headache, and neck stiffness, and maybe change in mental status. Mm-hmm. That most of the time that we'll pick up those cases. And then we get more of the symptoms when the doctor go in and take the history of the patient and find out when they ask the history by review of system, they might find the patient might have some rash. They might find the patient might have some stomach upset or diarrhea. That can happen. More common in West Nile than St. Louis or Eastern equine encephalitis, but it's not specific. Hmm.
Do the St. Louis and the equine share a similar evolutionary history or pattern as the West Nile, which is the hepatitis C family of viruses?
Those are not quite the same, but it share one thing. It share the vector and the host. Mm-hmm. The same birds will carry these viruses, and the other hosts, including horses and human more like accidental hosts, that when we got it, we got really sick really quickly, because normally we're not supposed to expose to this kind of viruses. Mm.
Can a bird actually carry more than one of these viruses?
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes.
So not every bird will die from getting bitten by a mosquito with a virus.
That's right. Because one is been exposed once, it's likely that they make some an antibody and have some protection to them.
So if they live through the initial infection, then it strengthens them against another virus.
Yes, and actually they will be able to carry the virus much longer time, and distant because bird flies. So they might not really get sick at all. Or if they have a lot of load of the virus, then they might get sick. They might die.
So two things. One is that even though a bird is maybe not be dead, you know, lying on the ground dead, if, even a live bird, children should stay away from.
It is that it doesn't really contract it by the casual contact,
okay.
Unless for dead birds, the recommendation is do not touch it because you don't really know what they have. And if they have cut, it's very hard to tell. But generally, the virus will be transmitted from bird. Mosquito will bite the bird and carry the virus inside them and go to the next host, either horses or human. And then once it got bit, they might develop the infection with could be a milder form. Most of adult, healthy adult, won't have any, generally don't have encephalitis. But people who are at risk, usually still they might not have anything much. But if they're not lucky enough, remember the number is really low for those who develop encephalitis is in approximately only about 1 every 150. So that's less than 1%. But if they are at risk, they might develop headache, neck stiffness, change in mental status, etc.
Just curiosity, does the existence in the bird, for example, of a previous episode of viral disease like West Nile virus, is that also, you mentioned that after they get one episode, it protects them against another to some extent.
This is more been well explained to epidemic in North America because the disease has been around just a little bit over 10 years in North America. We found that when we look at disease investigation, by history, the disease started from the Northeast and then they spread along the East Coast and then it's generally moving towards the West. Right now, we almost can say that West Nile virus infection is endemic in North America. And actually, that's somewhat a good news because some people that have been exposed might have immunity to it. It's protective somewhat, but it's not 100%. So, but do you see the number of cases is much less?
Is there, I'm just curious, is there immunity, if you have immunity or perhaps immunity to one virus that can cause encephalitis, does it carry over to, say, the St. Louis or equine?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be back for more. This is Dr. Steve Maskin. Today we're talking about West Nile encephalitis with Dr. Sam of USF Infectious Disease Department. Call in with your questions. That's 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. Be right back with more.
So exciting.
The best military exhibit I've ever seen.
Very educational.
They're talking about the Armed Forces Military Museum in Largo, the largest collection of military memorabilia in Florida. Each diorama bringing the past to life with the sights and sounds of battles that made history. Dedicated with respect to those who've served our country faithfully. Learn more at www.armedforcesmuseum.com. That's www.armedforcesmuseum.com.
Why does everyone mumble so much?
Restaurants are so noisy.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Sound familiar? Dr. Indira Alvarez, board-certified audiologist, can help you hear better today and change your life. I know what you're thinking, but with today's technology, advanced hearing instruments are small and discreet. Don't wait. If you're having hearing difficulties, call Alvarez Audiology for an appointment. 813-265-2255. That's 813-265-2255.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support.
Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. This is Dr. Steve Maskin. I'm with Dr. Sam. Also, the full name, Dr. Sharut Sambunwit of the Infectious Disease Department and Hillsboro Department of Health, the Infectious Disease Department of the USF College of Medicine here in Tampa, Florida. And we've been focusing the hour on West Nile virus and West Nile encephalitis and giving you information. Of course, I'm learning also today and about this disease and what to look for, when to seek attention, and prevention. And we're going to review a couple of things that are especially important as we enter this mosquito season. Specifically, Dr. Sam, let's talk again about, number one, it's actually a very, very low incidence of patients going on to develop the full-blown encephalitis picture. Isn't that correct?
Yes, because remember, 80% of people got infected without any symptoms at all. And then 20% have mild disease with West Nile fever, basically with fever, headache, ache and pain in the muscle, some lymph enlargement, rash, etc.
Is there a typical lymph node that gets involved?
No,
this one.
This because the infection is generalized.
So it could be a generalized. Does one see a lymph node emerge close to the area of bite, or before the other areas develop, or not really?
No, it's not really.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's systemic infection. So when the person got bit, the virus will spread all over the body and cause problems. Mm-hmm. But only less than 1% that has encephalitis. So I would like the audience to remember that although the disease is untreatable and preventable, but the severe outcome is rare, but you don't want that to happen in your family.
Can one get a meningitis without the encephalitis picture, or is it typically the whole thing?
This particular infection usually is encephalitis, mm-hmm. all meningoencephalitis, but it's very rare to see meningitis alone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, as you just pointed out, it is rare, and the majority of patients, 80% actually, do not develop a symptom. Now, is the one you mentioned 1 in 150 develop encephalitis. Is that 1 in 150 of the 20% that develop a mild case?
No, it's one of the 150 on people who got infected.
Infected, okay. And when should the patient or the individual seek attention?
When the headache is really worse and it doesn't, when you try to treat with over-the-counter medication, doesn't get any better, and usually headache is worse in the life, associated with neck stiffness, and sometimes with change in mental status, and that can be picked up by the family member, not the patient. Some numbness and weakness, if it happened with all the symptoms I just mentioned, and then you really need to seek medical attention.
So this is I'm hearing the neurologic symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Really, when if you start getting neurologic symptoms, then that sounds like an emergency room visit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Now the fever you mentioned, is that typically a high? Can it be a high grade fever, or can it be a low grade as well?
It depends on the severity of the disease. With West Nile fever itself, it can have some low grade, but some people can experience fevers pretty high.
So, and does it matter if the person is very old or very young as far as the symptoms are involved? I think you mentioned the very old and very young can get more severe symptoms or the greater likelihood of going on to develop severe case.
Yes. And if the children is really young, usually they're not able to tell as much as far as the symptoms, the warning symptoms before they develop encephalitis. For the old, the symptoms can mimic some other things. So sometimes they're not be able to pick up before the disease has progressed to encephalitis.
And so importantly, because I know, you know, I mean, my kids this summer, it's, you know, outside sports. You're not going to, as you pointed out, we talked earlier today, you're not going to wear long pants, long sleeve shirt when you're outside playing sports. And you have to, you know, think along the lines of the preventative, you know, the application of these sprays, the DEET, the Picaridin, the IR3535, to protect them. Now, how frequently should these be placed on the skin, on the exposed area of the skin?
Yeah, it's in instruction. But if you go outside and you sweat a lot, you better want to apply more often.
Yeah, yeah, because you can certainly sweat it off, and then you wind up without protection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens if you also want to prevent sunburn? So you also want to put on sunscreen. You're able to address the issue of sunscreen as well as DEET has that? Or maybe there are some products that have both in them.
That would be great if they have both in them, but I haven't seen one. But let's say if I have to go to the swamp during the day, I will apply both. It's equally important. The DEET, though, you don't really need to apply underneath the clothing. But for sunscreen, sometimes your clothes might not really cover prevent the UV as much. So for sunscreen, you might want to put inside the clothing as well. That's what I practically do.
But so I'm wondering for the sun exposed areas, can you put on both, you know, one over the other, or will you?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so they're not the one doesn't negate the other one, and you can put on the sunscreen. It won't wipe away the DEET, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So they can work together.
And both of the products can sweat off. So if you have to be outside for a long period of time, it's a good idea to put it back.
Okay. All right, we're just about wrapping up today's show. I'll ask Dr. Sam if there's any final comments, thoughts, or to summarize West Nile virus.
The disease is not common. Encephalitis is not common, but it's not treatable. You want to prevent it. And remember the 5 Ds. Stay away to be outside during the dusk and dawn. Dress properly. Apply DEET. And drain any standing water that can breed the mosquitoes.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Sam.
Thank you, Dr. Maskin. I appreciate you having me.
Now, next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we're going to be tackling ovarian cancer. Ovarian cancer with Dr. Tyler Kirby. I will share with you now the next, about 7 or 8 shows. We have ovarian cancer, followed by hemophilia and von Willebrand disease, followed by tuberculosis, the looming and secret epidemic, followed by sexually transmitted disease, followed by blepharitis, followed by diverticulosis and diverticulitis, followed by pelvic organ prolapse, followed by dry eye and meibomian gland disease. Let's see, that takes us through July 25th. And then, we have another show we have scheduled for August the 1st, and that's called Put Your Hemorrhoids Behind You. Okay. So there you have it. That's the next series of shows. Takes us to early August.